ready to begin. It is page Memvav, Amud Aleph, Halacha Gimel, the fifth parak of Peah. Ein Megalgalin B'Tofeach. You cannot irrigate your field to the point of it being dripping wet, because before they even take the leket, because the aniyim are going to experience hezek. If you're going to soak the field, then all that leket that they haven't collected yet, it's going to get soaking wet and get ruined. So you gotta wait, okay? Divrei Meir, that's what Meir holds. Chacham Matir Neisha Efshar. Chacham hold it's Matir because it's possible. What's possible? What do you think the pshat is? Anything's possible.
They can collect it anyway.
They can pay back the aniyim, the amount that they may be mafsed them, and therefore they don't have to change their routine. They have a routine. That is, after they finish the harvest, apparently they soak the field in order to get it ready for the next crop. And for them to be disrupted in their routine could possibly cause them a loss. So they don't have to change their routine. That's basically the machlokes here. So both Rav Meir and the Chacham, they point out, there's no nakamina monetarily wise. Neither one is going to end up winning in this machlokes. It's a question of who has to pay who, right? According to Rav Meir, the aniyim would have to pay the Baal Bas if he has any loss. And according to Chachamim, the Baal Bas will have to pay the ani if they have any loss. But there's no nafkamina. That's the end of footnote, in the middle of footnote 5, it says, what I just read you, I'll just read it inside, and it emerges with respect to financial gain or loss, there's no practical difference between Tannaic opinions. Everybody agrees the party suffering the loss must be compensated. Okay, so that's basically it. That's the Mishnah. So the Mishnah uses the language of Ein Megalgalin B'Tofeach. Now there's a Braisa which is going to use a slightly different language, and that's going to be important, the fact that it's using a different language, and you'll see in a second. Tani, the Braisa says, Hamarabet Sadehu Ad Shaliyarad Oni L'Socha. Someone who wants to drench his field before the ani has had a chance to go to collect his pay, his leket. So the rule is like this. Here it's a little more nuanced. We take a look at whose hezek is more. Im hezeko meruba al shel ani. If the Baal Bais's hezek is greater than the loss that the ani will experience, then mutar, he can go ahead and drench the field. Then hezek ani meruba shelo. But if the poor person's hezek is greater, then also he cannot. It doesn't make a difference. Either way, you can't drench your field. You have to pick up the leket and hang it on the wall so that the aniyim can come and take it.
Why don't we give them like an expiration date? Say like you have a week to pick it up and then...
All right. The honey bavanaitel is shalom. I mean, this could be within that week. I mean, I'm not saying this is this could be within that week. You may want to drench your field within that week. You're assuming that I'm going to wait a week. I'm telling you that's the whole point here. Maybe I don't have to wait a week. I want to drench the field now.
Is this Mishnah flow from the last Mishnah?
This Braisa?
Yeah.
Well, that's the Gemara's going to explain. They're going to explain the differences here. Yeah. Because one, blatant difference over here is in our Mishnah, the Chachamim were matar because it's Efshar, they allowed it, and they didn't make any cheshbon as to whether it was going to be Hefsed Merubah or Hefsed Muat. There was no cheshbon. We just allowed it across the board. The Gemara is going to point out this thing. So the Gemara says like this, Milcha Foshitase Dereb Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is inconsistent. Why? Taman, later on, when it comes out, when it's talking about someone's thinning out their vineyard. So this is later on, where is this later on? 9. It's in Parak Zion, Mishnah Dalet. It says, when grapevines are too densely concentrated, you can uproot some of them in order to improve the growth of the remaining vines. And the question is, what about ololos, which are on those vines that you're going to be uprooting? Ololos, of course, you know, are the clusters that are kind of like malformed and belong to the ani. So if you have on some of those vines that you're going to uproot ololos, so what do you do with those? So,
in other words, are you causing
hefsid? I am going to be causing hefsid. If I leave them connected to the ground, I'm going to experience hefsid. It's the same issue. It's I'm going to experience hefsid versus the aniyim experiencing hefsid. Okay? So let's see what it says. Tamon hu oimer. Those of you who just joined us were on 46A2. Tamon hu oimer. Over there, in when we're talking about the ololos, where you're thinning out the vineyard, he says, Rabbi Huda says, Kishem shu meidel b'shalo. Just like you can thin out your own vines. In other words, that's something that you do as a matter of course. Kachu meidel b'shalaniyim, so you could thin out the ones that have ololos on them, even though it's going to cause a hefsek. So Rabbi Huda does not require the delay to do what he would normally do to make the necessary fixes to his vineyard. The kahu oimer hochein. But over here, when we're talking about drenching a field, what does he say? He says, menichan al hagoder v'ha'ani bovenoit al shalom, that he has to delay the drenching to protect the interests of the poor. Is that really called delaying it? Well, I mean, he can drench it, but he has to first look out for the ani. So that's a stira. Right? It says, Manichan al ha-godar v'hani b'avanoit al ha-shalom. So that apparently is a delay, right? You're looking out for the ani's leket. And over there by the vineyard, he doesn't require anything. He just go right ahead, plow ahead, and get rid of it, right? Come on. So Gemara is going to answer the question, right? So we have a steer and a rehuda. So Gemara answers, Tamon, over there in the vineyard, Hein gomula atzman. The poor people caused the loss themselves. Because ololos, when do ololos appear? Fairly early on in the grapes process, it becomes obvious which clusters are going to have ololos. So the aniyim had ample time to collect those ololos. And if they waited to the very, very, very last minute when the owner is already going to have to start thinning out, that's their fault. It's in the opposite of Shai, basically. That's the Gemara saying. Hein gom la'atzman v'lag bo'u. Baram hocha, but over here, harei bo'u. It's not their fault. They came to collect the leket as soon as it became available. And now he wants to drench the field right away. Right? So this is kind of like addressing your question. About the, you know, let's give them a time period.
What, time
what I'm telling you is that it is, this is the time period. They're there right when they're supposed to be, but he has his needs. Okay, yeah, what?
The field is open all the time to people?
The field?
The field, the person.
You mean
the
ololos?
Yeah,
no,
it's open.
He can, I think, I don't see any need for the aniyim to wait for a certain time. I mean, We said earlier, Mishnayos, that the Baal Bayis comes out, or Sholosh Ibayos Biyom, remember?
Right.
There were three times, Shachas Melech HaMayrif, so to speak, that he called it out. But, you know, we were talking about Peah, I think, over there, right?
That's the end of the season when I'm gonna cut the...
But as far as Olos are concerned, your question is, and I think the answer is yes, that he can come in any time. And get his ololos if they're available. I think so. I don't know otherwise. I don't know. Here, Yerushalmi certainly is mashma over here that if they didn't come earlier, when they could have, it's their own fault. Let's see. Does 11 say anything?
It says that thinning out was done after the harvest.
Hold on one second. I'm just looking over here. I'm looking at the plain Moshe. Devar Maskel Tamon Hein Gomul Atzmon. Just take a look over here what it says.
Okay.
He doesn't say an exact time over there in the Pnei Moshe. I thought he would maybe speak it out. Looking anywhere else? I don't want to hold you the oil up over here. Okay, let's go on. Now, so that was Mifafashi Tase to Rabbi Yehuda. Now the Yerushalmi is going to go to Mifafashi Tase to Rabbanit. The Rabbanit also have an inconsistency. Why? Tamon Inun Amrit. We said at the time, right after the Mishnah, by Harabits, okay, keep track of the Mishnah, the Brisa that came right after the Mishnah. That's the Tamon. That's where they said, Im Heziko Merubal Shalani. If his Hezek is more than the Oni, we let him do the drenching. So, we're making a cheshvan. V'cha'inon Amrin, and here in the Mishnah, they say hach, and they say this, meaning they don't make any cheshbonus. They just say that it's mutter. We pointed that out, right? That you can irrigate the field until it is dripping wet, and you don't have to make cheshbonos. Is my loss greater than their loss? That's the steerer. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now we're on Amid Beis, Memvav Amid Beis. The Gemara says, Tamon, let's see, our girsa here in the English is different than the Hebrew, so be aware of that. Tamon E F sharp. There in the Brisa, it's impossible. This is very, very, this is like, we have to just accept what the Yerushalmi is telling us here. It just tells us this fact. I don't know how they know it, but it's impossible to accurately assess the loss and impose payment in the Brisa. Bram Hocha Efshar, but in the Mishnah, it is possible to assess the loss. I have no idea how we know this. It's just a statement of fact that the Yerushalmi puts here. I see no logical connection to anything that's said here. I don't know. At the bottom, he tries to explain it over here. Here in two, he tries to explain it. I really didn't get it. The Bryce's language is he drenches his field. The Mishnah says you may not irrigate the field until it's dripping wet. So which is more of a saturation? So he says drenching is a fuller saturation than the irrigating until dripping wet of the Mishnah. So the Brisa is more water than the Mishnah. So one who drenches his field, that's going to cause a significant loss to the Ani, because I guess you're flooding out all their leket, right? Conversely, in other words, when he says conversely here, what he's trying to say is you have to explain what's the loss for the Baal Bas as well. So if the field is so dry that it needs a drenching, so then that's going to be a significant loss for the owner if he doesn't do it. Okay? So if we would impose upon the owner to compensate the poor for the damage that results from drenching, it won't be worth his while to proceed with the drenching. But if we impose upon the Aniyim to compensate him, then it's not worth it for them to collect the leket. So therefore, they gave this rule that you just decide whose loss is worse. So that's why the Brisa, they make the cheshbon. Whoever's loss is worse, that's the one who gets to proceed. Well, okay, I don't know. The Mishnah is talking about irrigating a field till the water drips on the surface. The field is not inundated with the water, so they don't suffer a great deal of loss. I don't know. This is all very... It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't get it. To me, if you're pouring water on tefuah, you're going to ruin the tefuah. I don't know what this difference is. This much water, that much water. I don't know. The whole metzias doesn't make sense to me. But basically, let's just accept the teretz of the Yerushalmi saying the reason why the Chachamim allow you to go forward in the Brisa case. The reason why they allow you to make a chesh, why they require you to make a cheshbon in the Brisa case is because it's efshar. It says Taman efshar. It's impossible to assess the loss, and so therefore, whichever party stands to lose more. I mean, that's like talking out of two sides of your mouth. You're telling me it's impossible to assess the loss, but then on the other hand, you're telling me whichever party has greater loss, that's the one that can go ahead. So you obviously are able to assess the loss. So which is it? I don't understand it. Okay, let's go on. Now, Rav Meir Amar Ein Megalgalin. Rav Meir said you cannot irrigate the field v'shomen lebal habayis behefseido, and so you assess the loss that he incurs. For Rabbanan Amar Ein Megalgalin, and the Rabbanan say you can irrigate the field v'shomen laniyim behefseido, and you can't. And you can assess the poor people. Anyway, that's what it says. Ulamim Mishalim. So the Gemara now asks the question: who are you going to pay? Who do you pay? That is to say,
which oni?
Which oni are you going to pay? What are your choices? Right, your choices are aniyim that are in your city, or aniyim in another city. I mean, paying aniyim in another city makes no sense at all. So this question,
like California trying to pay for reparations for slavery. Who are you going
to
pay?
Yeah, exactly. It's a little strange, and the Mefarshim explained that this question really doesn't necessarily belong over here. We're going to come back to this question, and we'll retroactively explain what it really means. Okay, Lani Yosei Irs, the Rav Yonah says, the obvious answer, it's the name of that city. The law came, had he not taught us that, Ma non Amrin, what would we have said? Amr Rav Kibar Adon, Lemidas Hadin Nitzracha, that you would have thought that the payment maybe is only to be Yotzei Yidei Shamayim, right? Sometimes you're Chayav Adini Adam, sometimes you're part of Adini Adam, you're Chayav Adini Shamayim. So you might have thought this was only a chiyuv to pay Medina Shemayim. So that's why Rabbi Yonah has to tell us it's Midas Hadin, that this is Chai V'dinei Adam, it's not just a Midas Hasidus. Also a very strange Shakavataya.
You pay the people from your city.
What's that?
You still pay only the aniyim of your city.
Yes. Okay. Let's learn the next Mishnah, and then we'll come back to what this question was. So the next Mishnah says, Baal HaBayis Shohei Ovim Mokam L'Mokam. You have a Baal HaBayis who's more halacha dalet. So a Baal HaBayis is going from place to place. You know, this has happened to me, where I once went cross-country, and I ran out of money. And I was in Los Angeles in the airport on Labor Day weekend, and I had no money, and I couldn't get out of there. So at that time, I had a halachic status of an oni. I could have taken public funds because I had a halacha status of an oni because I was without money and I was away from home, my home base. So what's the rule? I could have taken Leket Shechem Pei also, right?
They don't have much of that in the library, in the airport.
Leket Shechem Pei, yeah, I was looking around. There was nothing growing. Anyway, so what's the rule? So it says over here in the Mishnah, he's going from one place to place. But Tzorach Lita Leket Shechem Pei or Meiser Ani, he had to take it because he ran out of funds. Yitol, he could take it. Ukeshiyachsa Lebesa, when he goes home, Yishalim, he should pay back what he took because he's really not a real Ani, he's not a bona fide Ani, he's just a temporary Ani, and therefore when he gets back to his, you know, to his ATM card, he should go ahead and take out the money that he took and give it back to Rebbe Eliezer. Rebbe Eliezer holds.
Who does he give it back to?
That was the way the Mefarshim explained the question. That was the kash of the Gemara we just had. Lemi Yishalem. That was the question that we just read. You were Mechavin to the shot. Lemi Hu Mishalem was going on this case. That's what the Mefarshim explained. Who's he going to pay? What are the choices?
His city, or where he
took the Leket Shechem Pei from. It's kind of funny. Like, why wouldn't you pay the people that you took the Leket Shechem Pei from? That seems to be obvious that you would pay them.
It's hard to get the money there.
You took their Leket Shechem Pei. But maybe, you know. Okay, we'll explain the Havim. There's a nice footnote here that explains it. The Chacham say, no, honey, he was poor at that time. And since he was poor at that time,
he doesn't have to pay
anything, not even Latzei Sidei Shemayim even. That's some people say that's the pshat, right? Yeah, it says, if you look in footnote 12, second paragraph, it says, from Bavli Chulin 130b, it's apparent, according to the sages, there's no reason for the traveling householder to repay the gifts, even as an act of virtue, even as Midas Chasidus. He has no need to pay it back. He was poor, and that's it. Okay? Okay. Hamachlefim Haniyim. Now, if you exchange your tevel with Lekat Shechampeya of the Ani, so obviously, what's going to happen is you have stuff which is Chayv Maisris, he has stuff which is Pater from Maisris, so the Mishnah is going to say the obvious. Bishalo Pater, the produce that is now his, meaning the produce that he got from the Ani, is obviously Pater. And Bishalaniyim, the stuff that the Aniyim end up with, Chayiv, then obviously the Ani has to take those Maisris, right? I think it's their responsibility, right?
I don't think so.
That seems to be the discussion here in variant B. Our text is Bishalo Pater B'Shalaniyim Chayev, which is he is exempt, he is liable, which means that the owner of the tevel has to take the maestros before exchanging it with the poor people. So it's he, right? The Rash, let's see what it says over here. It's Mishnah Rishona, down to the next paragraph. Mishnah Rishona, however, questions the comparison. Let's skip over the lumdus of it.
Where were you?
I'm just in variant B, towards the bottom of it. It says over here, in our Mishnah case, the bottom line on the left side, that poor person is voluntarily trading his like a chikampeya for someone else's tevel. So if he's willing to make the exchange, to take the maestros. In other words, he's basically raising the issue. We just had yesterday a whole discussion about where a leket of the oni gets mixed into the balabas's stuff. So we gave a whole discussion about how you have to take one and pick it up and say that this is leket, and if not, then it's a... So he's taking the balabas is clearly mechuyif to take the maestros. But over there, it was involuntary. It wasn't the Ani's will for his leka to be mixed up with the Balbayas' stuff. Here, he's voluntarily exchanging it, so therefore, you know, I guess the issue is it a fair exchange, right? That's the way I would see it. Like, if I'm giving one stock for your stock, so it's not fair if you have to take Mises from your stock. So what kind of exchange is that? But if you're accepted upon yourself and I stipulate that it should be that way and you accept it, so then I don't know what the machlokas here is, what it's dependent on.
Accepts it in the original deal, he accepts it in the original deal.
You accept it, you accept it. You know, I don't know why you would accept it. Maybe you like the quality of the temple so much you're willing to pay the maestros. I don't know. It seems like a strange machlokas. Okay. Shnayim it could be also shilas of lifnei iver, that you're setting an ani who you may not be aware of whether he's going to be upkehidu. Maybe he's nama aretz. I mean, that would also be a cheshbon also. Okay, shnayim shekiblu son of arisos. Two people. Well, normally we have sharecropper arrangements where we've always talked about sharecropper arrangements. It's usually one person. We've always talked about it. One person is going to work the field for the ball bus, and it's going to be lemechsa l'shlish l'rvia, right? He'll take a certain portion. Here, instead of there being only one person, there are going to be two people that are taking it. They're going to work together. Zeh no sein lozeh chelko maiserani. Now, the reason why we're stipulating that we're two people here is because if I was the only one working the field, let's suppose I was an oni, and I was the sharecropper. So since I have what's it called, a basic interest in the field? I don't know what the right language is. A fundamental interest in the field, I become like an owner, and the owner of a field can never take like a chicken pay from his own field, even if he is an oni. We've said this many times, right? The darshan from the pasuk, you can see the footnotes, the drush, I'm not going to go over it again. So If it was only one sharecropper, he wouldn't have any possibility of taking any of this. But now that we have two sharecroppers, so now the Mishnah is telling us a way around this problem. Now I can give you my leket shechem peah, and you, meaning my fellow Oris, can give me your leket shechem peah, because now we're not taking it from my own part of the field that I own. I'm taking it from the part that you own. Okay? And that's the way we get around that problem. Okay. There's more to the Mishnah that goes on to Mem Zayin. Let's try to learn it a little bit. So then it says on Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, Hamakavo Soda Liktzar, if you are, this doesn't mean kavlonis in the classic sense of kavlonis. Remember, I told you, arisos is you get a portion of what you harvest. Kavlonis, you accept upon yourself to deliver a certain fixed quantity at the end of the season. This makabel is not that kablonis. This is a different word, makabel. Here he is, the difference is that an oris works the field the whole season. This person is just a harvester. He accepts upon himself he leases a field for the purpose of harvesting it. So it's the same idea, right? I'm going to take a portion of what I harvest, but I'm only going to be working that week, the harvest week, right? But that's it. So that's the case. So he is also like a shekel pay with my sorani. He can't take anything. I guess for the same reasons, right? Although it grew in the sole possession of the owner, and the worker acquired his sharecropper's interest only when he began harvesting, he still can't take that stuff, because once he gained the ownership rights to the field and its produce, while it was still attached, so the mitzvah of leaving the matonis for the aniyim falls upon him as well. That's what it says in footnote 2. So, okay, so fine. So you can't take it. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Masai. When is that true? Bezman shekiblo mimenu lemetzel shesh leviyah. That's if he accepted upon himself to, I'm going to cut a certain amount, I'm going to cut the field, and I'm going to take a certain amount from the harvest. But im amalo, if the baal bas, that the owner said to him, shlish masha atok kotzer shalcha, that a third of what you harvest will be yours. It's in other words, he's giving it to him from his own portion. It's not that. I guess it means that it's after the fact, I guess. I'm not 100% sure. But it wasn't built into the original deal, right? Shlish ma shatok otzer shalcha, a third of what you harvest shall be yours. I think the difference is that it happens. His kinyan in the soda only begins after it's harvested, right? In the ratio, the reason why it was also, remember, we said the reason why is because he became a part owner while the tefuah was still attached to the ground. In this case, his ownership only begins after the ksira is over. So while it was attached to the ground, he had no kind of like ownership rights at all. Therefore, it changes. He can take lakshon peah, but it says awesome meiser ani. Why is he awesome meiser ani? The Gemara is going to explain that. Okay, I didn't do it yet. So we'll stop here. Let me just stop the recording.